You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95BFM with our European correspondent Cameron Mulgan.
It's time to get into this week's Eurovision, our regular segment where I catch up with European correspondent Cameron Mulgan, where I hear about what's going on in Europe. This morning, Cameron joined me from Berlin and we spoke about the war in Ukraine, US President Biden's tour in Europe, elections in Hungary and Serbia, and developments in the world of digital tech over there. Here we are now.
Kia ora, Cameron. Let's start off, of course, with an update on the situation in Ukraine. Can you tell me what's happened over the past week and more specifically the last 48 hours?
Yeah, so with the war, another 300,000 refugees have fled Ukraine. This brings the total now up to 3.9 million, according to UNHCR. There were peace talks in Istanbul today between Russia and Ukraine. Russia has said that it will significantly cut back its military activity in northern Ukraine after, quote, meaningful progress, although no ceasefire just yet. Western officials have expressed skepticism at the statement, although they have seen some military pullback around Kyiv. In the talks, Ukraine proposed that it would be a neutral country, so this means no NATO alliance or foreign bases, and also proposed a 15-year consultation period on Crimea, which Russia annexed in 2014. Yes. Russia will take these proposals back to Putin for more discussion. And it's important to remember that Zelensky said that any peace terms will also be taken as a referendum back to the people in Ukraine. Military-wise, heavy fighting continues in the southeast port city of Mariupol, with Russia making slow advances inside the city. In the missile attack we mentioned a couple weeks ago on a theatre sheltering civilians, Mariupol authorities have said that up to 300 people have been killed, although another 600 have survived. Russian advances around Chernihiv, Sumy and Kharkiv stall, with Ukraine counterattacks reported in areas around northwest Kyiv. Some Russian troops have been reported to be redeploying to the eastern Donbas region. And today, a rocket attack on a government building in a southern port city of Mykolaiv killed at least 9 people. But not the regional governor, Vitaly Kim, who on Telegram afterwards said that he overslept, so he missed the bombing. There was a great documentary as well released over the weekend by Vice News on the siege of Kharkiv. So I highly recommend that if you want to see what it's like on the ground there.
Cool. We'll see if we can get the link to that up on the podcast after the show. Last week when we spoke, it was just before Biden's tour. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Biden was over in Europe for lots of meetings. There was a big NATO summit, a G7 meeting, and a meeting with the EU27, as well as a visit to Poland. NATO pledged more support. There was equipment, more equipment in case of chemical attacks, and more forces deployed on NATO's eastern flank bordering Russia. However, Zelensky didn't really get what he wanted. There was no no-fly zone, no new planes for the Ukrainian Air Force, and he was pleading for a lot more aid. The US pledged a further $1 billion in non-military aid, and it also said that would take in 100,000 refugees from Ukraine into America. The US also pledged 15 billion cubic meters of liquefied natural gas to support, which would support the EU moving off Russian imports. As we spoke about before, that's a significant source of income for Russia. But one of the other kind of big things to come out of it was a bit of a gaffe Biden made on Saturday. So there was a speech in Poland and he made an offhand remark where he said Putin cannot remain in power. This might kind of seem obvious to listeners, but it can be interpreted as the US calling for regime change. So it can be seen as being quite escalatory and kind of lowers certain opportunities to exit the conflict.
Let's move on now to some elections happening throughout Europe this weekend. Firstly, elections in Hungary. Can you tell me about those?
Yeah, so Hungary takes part in parliamentary elections this Sunday, and the war in Ukraine has provided a significant shift in polling. Viktor Orban, with his party Fidesz, have been in power since 2010 and is seeking a fourth term. During this time, Hungary has shifted significantly to the right and lost democratic freedoms and what's being called democratic backsliding. When Orban openly embraces the term a liberal democracy. So you've seen lots of restrictions on LGBT rights, significant drop in press freedom, and also loss of judicial independence. Together with Poland, they were the outcasts of the EU and were proving to be quite a problem for EU leadership. Only 2 weeks before the war in February, the European Court of Justice upheld freezing of certain EU payments to Hungary and Poland over this backsliding and violation of EU law. So the main opposition party is called United for Hungary, which is a bloc of 6 groups, which is similar to a coalition tactic that won in the Czech Republic last year. A couple of months ago, before the war, the opposition party were polling 5 points ahead. However, since the war, it's become neck and neck. So Orban has had very good relations with Russia and Putin, and it hasn't actually hurt him domestically. He hasn't blocked EU sanctions against Russia, but he has had no weapons being transported into Ukraine through Hungary, which has proved very popular So because of this, he's been labelling himself as a pro-peace candidate, which has proven quite successful. There have also been concerns of election fraud and ballot tourism. The Organisation for Security and Cooperation in Europe will be doing a full-scale monitoring mission.
Following the elections in Serbia as well, can you tell me what those are looking like?
Yeah, so kind of similar. So there's general and national assembly elections on Sunday. Serbia traditionally has had strong relations with Russia and hasn't enacted any sanctions over Ukraine. The PM, Aleksandar Vučić, is the incumbent with a coalition party called SNS, which translates to Together We Can Do Everything. He's been the prime minister since 2014, and since then, observers have described Vučić's rule as an authoritarian, autocratic, or a liberal democratic regime, citing curtailing press freedom. In 2018 and 2019, there were significant protests around Vučić's way of ruling, and in the 2020 parliamentary elections, it was boycotted by a majority of parties. This led to a report by the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Support saying that Serbia ceased to be a democracy in 2020. And even last year, there were significant large-scale protests against certain environmental laws. However, it is expected that he'll win again. The main opposition coalition party called United Serbia is polling quite poorly.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to hearing those results when we catch up next week and what they mean for both Hungary and Serbia. Let's finish up by swinging to the world of digital tech and some new regulations in the EU, I believe. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, so after over a year of negotiations,